I was getting a bit concerned this morning. I kept looking for Jason and never did see him. So finally I went and asked Rory, have you seen Jason? He said, oh, Jason has two sick kids today, and so he's not going to be here. Thank you to Greg for leading this morning. It's he does his normal good job in leading us, but it's even more difficult to do that with somebody else's plan in place. So we appreciate his willingness to do that this morning. I told you last week I couldn't see the clock. I still can't. At Guthrie one Sunday, before we had a clock, my watch had broken, and so I told the church that and asked if I could borrow a watch. And nobody volunteered, so I said, well, okay, the only way I'm going to be able to tell time is when it gets dark in the foyer. And I had numerous watches offered to me at that particular point in time. I have my timer today, so if you hear it go off, you'll know I've over-talked just a little bit. My dad used to say that preachers don't need clocks, they need calendars. So that tells you a little bit about the background that I come from. I remember as a child, and a very small child, a preschooler, and I've shared this with you before, going to the home of what I consider to be a very old man. He was blind. He would sit out on the front porch in his rocking chair and rock back and forth with his cane in his lap, and he would sing, "When the roll is called up yonder, I'll be there." His name was Papa McElroy. He was my grandfather's father. And I can, as I look back on those times, I think that it really probably he was imagining or envisioning literally the moment when he would leave this world and go to another world where he could see again and be whole again and function as he wanted to. It was really kind of a special kind of picture that was there. All of us have our own ideas about what heaven is going to be like and the kind of experience that we're going to have there. This morning, I'd really like for us to just focus on some ideas about heaven. Actually, if you could just kind of relax and let it pour over you. If you go to sleep, that's okay. Because it's such a wonderful feeling. It's such a wonderful experience. We don't talk about heaven enough. We don't emphasize it enough. We feel like everybody knows about heaven, and certainly we do. But I think it's useful for us to have reminders about that particular existence and that particular situation. You may this morning be on the mountaintop. You may be as high up spiritually and emotionally as you can get. And you may feel like heaven's just one easy step. You may also be in the deepest, darkest valley. And you may feel like heaven is so far removed. And yet to talk about it, to think about it, and discuss it with each other, hopefully can give us strength and encouragement no matter what stage we're in. And we sometimes trade those stages, and those stages can turn very, very quickly depending on the events of life. God believes in reward. And sometimes we get hung up about reinforcement and various kinds of things in this regard. He believes in punishment, and he believes in reward. He instituted those particular things, and he gives to us reward. People say, well, I'd rather somebody do it because they want to. Well, sure, and that's the best thing. And a parent talking about a child, that certainly is the best thing. We look at the motivators in the life of people and the way God is trying to motivate folks. And fear is often the early thing. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And then maybe you overcome that and move on to another level where you start to really look forward to being in heaven and having that reward. And other people come along and they say, but you want to get to that place where you have this great relationship with God and you just want to go home and be with him no matter where it is. And sure, that's a wonderful goal. But we all find ourselves on different paths. And we all find ourselves at different levels of development. And it may be that some of these early motivators are the things that are motivating you right now. And there's nothing wrong with that. Because that's the reason that we have them. And that's the reason that God has provided them for us. This morning, I just want to ask a few simple questions. And what I've done is I've asked some people these questions over the course of the last couple of weeks. And I'm going to share with you some of the answers that I've gotten back to things, questions related to heaven. What are you looking forward to the most? My father-in-law, Jack Stamps, loved to eat peanut M&Ms. And he'd pick up a handful and start to throw them into his mouth. And often he'd say, "Rob, in heaven, these aren't going to have any calories." That was the thing he was looking forward to. The thing that was suggested to me the most is the lack of pain. In Revelations 24, verse 1, he will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. That moment when there's nothing that's going to hurt anymore. Not going to hurt physically. You're not going to hurt emotionally. Not going to feel any kind of pain. No need to cry. No need to mourn. And when we think about having that kind of opportunity, it really is something that stimulates us. We've probably not experienced that much in life. Maybe we've had moments when things were pretty clear and things were pretty good. But we've always known that other shoe is going to drop, or that we're going to turn the corner. There's going to be difficulty again. And yet when we get to this perfect place that God has created, he says, this is it. You don't have to worry anymore. Everything is okay. The second thing that people mentioned was reunion. Now, the faces they wanted to see and the people that they wanted to be reunited with. And this talking about that particular issue sometimes gives us some concern, because we don't have all of the information about what heaven's going to be like. And we'll talk about that a little bit more going on. Part of it is the fact that we just couldn't comprehend it if we did. How are we going to be reunited? And we love hearing these after-death stories. When people talk about the light and going through that, and typically the first thing that they see are the faces of their loved ones. And that's something that really inspires us and really motivates us, because that's what we'd like. People that aren't here today, they're people in your life, they're parents and grandparents and friends and neighbors and children and others that you're desperately longing for that moment to see and hold again. In Genesis chapter 25, we have a reference that I just like so very, very much. Then Abraham breathed his last and died at a good old age, an old man and full of years. And then that last statement, and he was gathered to his people. That's how death is described in this part of the Old Testament. When people die, they're reunited with their people. They're reunited with their family. And I don't believe for a minute that God would talk to us in those terms if that really doesn't happen. This isn't an isolated passage either. Ishmael in Genesis 25, Isaac in Genesis 35, Jacob in Genesis 49, Aaron in Numbers 20, Moses in Deuteronomy 32. That phrase is used over and over again with these patriarchs. That's where they go. They're gathered to their people. And I don't know about you, but that's tremendously comforting and tremendously motivating and something that just pulls you heavenward. You want to do that because there are faces you haven't seen for a very long time. Another thing that people said was, it's not going to end. Can you imagine something that has no end? Oftentimes children will say, where did God come from? Well, God has always been. Well, how does that work? And that's really difficult to explain. It's just as difficult for us to understand that things aren't going to have an end. It's not ever going to be over, because everything that we experience in this life has some end to it. And Jesus talks about everlasting numerous times, especially in the book of John. And it's just something that's hard for us to really wrap our minds around. We're talking right now about a fall vacation in our family and trying to decide where to go and when and all those kind of things. But my family reminded me of the fact that I always say that my favorite part of the vacation is when the plane lands, because every bit of it is in front of you. You know, you've got the whole time to look forward to. But what happens? time goes by so quickly, and before you even think about it, you're packing up and heading back to that same place to come home. We experience that in this life. But when we experience the glory and the joy of heaven, it's going to continue forever. I remember as a child hearing preachers say that if you took a 10-foot block of granite and every 1,000 years an eagle would swoop over the top of that granite, by the time it was worn totally down to the ground, you wouldn't have used any time in heaven. And it's just unbelievable to think of that. Incredible joy, reunion, and it's not going to be over. It's going to continue. Second question that I ask is, what's your favorite Bible passage? And one is the one that we've already read this morning, John 14, verses 1 through 4. Verse 2 says, "My Father's house has many rooms. If we're not so, but I've told you, going there to prepare a place for you." And that passage had a lot more meaning to the people who heard it originally than it does for us today. As you know, the practice of marriage in that particular time was that the groom would enter into a contract with the family of the bride. They would contract for those two people to be married. And then the groom would go and prepare a place to live. Now, sometimes that was a room in the house of the father. Often it was an addition that had to be built on to the family home so that this new family would have a place to live. In some cases with people that were wealthy, it was a separate house and a separate place. But that process had to be completed before the marriage contract was carried out. It could have been weeks, it could have been months, it was often years before the bridegroom would come back and say, "Okay, now we're going to be married." And they would go to their new home, the marriage would be consummated, and then there was a period of celebration, a banquet. We don't do marriages that way. But that's what Jesus is talking about here. He's saying to them, "I'm going away, but like a bridegroom, I'm going to prepare the place for us to live. And then I'm coming back to get you." And right now, that preparation has taken place and in all likelihood continues to take place. Again, a favorite passage is Revelation chapter 21 that we've already read this morning. Colossians 3, 1 through 2. "Since then you've been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on earthly things." And the people who suggested this said it's about perspective. It's about shifting to the place where you understand that you're a citizen of heaven. You understand that things don't have to be perfect here. Things aren't going to be perfect here. You live with that and you understand that because your dwelling is somewhere else. And it really is about attitude. And it really is about the fact that I can put up with things when I'm away from home because it's going to be the way I want it to be and need for it to be and the way I like for it to be when I get home. And that's an important consideration for us. The passage by far, though, that was suggested the most is 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 9. "However, as it is written, what no eye has seen, what no ear has heard, and what no human mind has conceived, the things God has prepared for those who love him." Nobody's ever seen it. Nobody's ever heard it. And some of the versions say no one has even imagined what God has prepared for this place of perfection. You can't even wrap your mind around it. Your mind doesn't have the capacity to do that. You're talking about three-dimensional people trying to focus on a multidimensional world. Our brains won't go there. We don't have the ability. When we talk about the pearly gates and the streets of gold, all that is language that helps us get a little bit of understanding of value. But what it's really going to be and the way it's really going to look and the way it's going to satisfy and fulfill us is something that we just really can't totally comprehend. The thing I have to ask you this morning, though, is there anything in your way? As you look forward to going to that place, is there any obstacle? Now, I don't want to do that to be fearful or to induce fear. It's not trying to do that at all, because I want you to be happy in looking forward toward heaven. In 1 John chapter 5, verse 13, I write these things to you who believe in the name of the Son of God, so that you may know that you have eternal life. I believe that we can know that we have eternal life. You say to people, are you going to heaven? And they say, I hope so. I think so. I'd like to. But it's really rare when people say, yes, absolutely. And that really is something that we need to wrap our minds around, something that we need to begin to say. It's even useful in evangelism. Are you going to heaven? Well, I'm hoping I'm going to heaven. I'm trying. No, that's not winning. I'm going to be with my father. My older brother has paid a price that makes it possible, and that's what the end of my existence is going to be, living with God, free of pain, totally and completely for eternity. That's where I'm going. That's where I'm headed. And I don't want to threaten that. But for each of us, we have to go back and think, now, is there something that stands between me and having that? Two things you need to ask yourself. Am I in Jesus? I am the way, truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. There's no way to get to heaven except through Jesus. And each of us has to make certain that we are there. We are at that place so that that's what's going to happen for us. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. Are you in Jesus Christ? If you aren't, then there are things that need to be different about the way you approach life. There are things that you need to change so that you can guarantee that you're heaven bound and you can have the confidence of knowing that that's really what's going to take place. The other issue that we have to deal with is, have we given it all up? Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. There's some challenge in finding exactly where God wants us to be. It's not that we can't do it, it's just that we have to put some effort into it and some commitment. And there are all kinds of things that Satan throws in our path to try to divert us. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1, the last part of that verse. Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. We throw off everything. Do you want to go to heaven? Absolutely. There's an old preacher story that was circulated years ago. The preacher was just really inspired about going to heaven, and he said, if you want to go to heaven, stand up. And everybody but one elderly gentleman stood up. And the guy stopped and said, Brother Williams, you don't want to go to heaven when you die? He said, well, I want to go when I die. I thought you were getting up a group to go now. And that becomes the paradox about heaven. We can spend so much time thinking about going somewhere else that we lose what's taking place right now here. And Paul talked about being of a divided mind. Do I depart and be with God that's better? Or do I stay here because there are people here who need me? And so we understand that our journey to heaven is in God's time. And sometimes we look at people, I've looked at people, older people, and thought, why are they still here? And God had a plan. And it's not up to us to decide what we're going to do. We look forward to heaven, but while we're here, we're going to be a soldier for the Lord. And we're going to do everything that we possibly can, not only to ensure our own salvation, but to help other people get there as well. You may remember the wilderness camping of the 70s and the 80s, where particularly youth groups would climb to the top of a mountain peak. And for some kids, that was a very easy thing to do. I know one young man that, you were supposed to train for 6 weeks and all these kind of things to get ready to go. And he had a backpack on. And when they got to the top of the mountain, he took a watermelon out of the backpack and shared watermelon with everybody. He wasn't worried at all about getting to the top of the mountain. And for some people, it's not much of a challenge at all. But the neat thing about the whole process was, it's not about getting there, it's about getting everybody in your group there. And that sometimes became a significant challenge, because there were people who had a much more difficult time. And this morning, as we think about going there, yeah, I want to go there, but I want to use my time here so that I'm helping other people get there as well. In closing this morning, I'll ask the last question. What's your favorite heaven song? I don't know, this song, one of my favorites, a youth song at Heaven is a Wonderful Place, the great song, Walking on Heaven Road. I haven't heard those songs in a long time. There's kind of the traditional songs like I'll Be Somewhere Listening for My Name, or I'll Fly Away, which we've sung, A Beautiful Place Called Heaven. But two that stand out especially for me are Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. And then my favorite of all is In That Great Getting Up Morning, Fare You Well, Fare You Well. Beautiful music, beautiful concept, wonderful idea that ought to stimulate us and give us confidence, that ought to cause us to sit back in God and relax and just enjoy the reality of what we have waiting for us. This morning, if you find yourself at a place where you're not exactly certain, though, please take the steps you need to take. It may be a private thing, but if it's something public that we can help you with right now, we'd be glad to do that while we sing this song together.